Okay, well, welcome back. Last module.
Already.
Here we go.
Can't believe it.
If this happened to be your first module, this is SharePoint Server 2013 Best Practices. That's Brian Alderman, and I'm Christopher Harrison. If this is actually your sixth module, well, then you already knew all of that information. Now, for those of you who maybe have forgotten what we've been talking about in the past, we've kind of seen how to do the installation. Yeah, there you go. How to get everybody trained up, how to handle the updates. But the last little thing is the four little words that you hear from every user that strike fear into the heart of SharePoint administrators everywhere. Make it go faster.
That's true, definitely.
Yeah, so how do we make it go faster?
I thought you were going to say, I didn't change anything.
Oh,
as the
well,
user.
Yeah, there's
I didn't change anything.
That. Yeah, I wasn't doing anything. Yeah. But yeah, you know, so how do you make it go faster? How do you deal with those correlation ID errors? How do you, you know, fix it?
Well, we're going to look at optimization and troubleshooting here. We're going to talk about SharePoint monitoring options and then look at some tools available to us for optimizing and troubleshooting in this final module here. So let's talk about our monitoring options. The first thing we have is we have some settings here on the left-hand column, and we can use these for managing or troubleshooting our environment, let's put it that way. So there's one called Event Log Flooding Protection. And by default, this is enabled. And what this does is it prevents your event log being flooded with the same error over and over and over and over again. But if you're troubleshooting and you want every little detail, you want to temporarily disable that. There's a timer job out there. This guy right here, by default, it reports information every 30 minutes. If you're really trying to troubleshoot something that's annoying you, we can downgrade that to every 5 minutes so that way we're getting more information. So obviously as we're doing this, we're getting more and more information. So we want to make sure this is a temporary deal only for the troubleshooting. The last one or another one here under diagnostics providers, this is disabled by default. We can temporarily enable that one. And after doing so, that's going to allow us to gather again more information. And then we have a couple jobs in here that we can use. By default, these are set at 5 minutes. We're going to drop those down to 1 minute. 1 minute. This is going to allow us to gather information that we need to troubleshoot a particular situation. These are not default values you want to keep forever. These are values you're going to turn down or modify temporarily, and then you're going to bring them back to your default value that it was prior to your troubleshooting situation.
I love that feature. It was such a little thing that they added in because, you know, in prior versions, you would go in, you'd make a change. You're like, okay, wait a minute. What did I change? And more importantly, what's it supposed to be set back to? So I love that little, you know, just a return to default option that's available.
It's
the little things in life that make me happy.
That's,
you know?
That's all it takes.
Yeah, that's it.
Definitely.
I'm a simple man.
That's bad company, isn't it? I don't know.
Anyway,
performance counters. We have some of these guys that we want to work with. Really, there's four key areas we're going to focus on: processor, network interface, because we're doing a lot of communications between our client server, disks and cache, and then, of course, we've talked about this a few times, memory and paging file. And we need to understand that these are really categories of performance counters that we want to be troubleshooting or looking at when we're troubleshooting. So you notice right here in the middle, it talks about over 80%. That's something that we're targeting. If it's over 80%, that's probably a bad situation. So what I've done in the next slide is given you some of the common performance monitor counters that you can use, but these aren't everything. So these are some that I would start with. So as we can see here, percent processor time. If it's more than 80, there's probably a situation with it. And what I've done is I've identified whether we want them high or low by putting these arrows in there. So average disk queue length, the lower the better. Average disk read queue length and write queue length, the lower the better. Pages per second, the lower the better. Available bytes, we want that one higher. So you can look into these in more detail, but this gives you an idea of some of the system performance counters that you can use for troubleshooting or monitoring. Actually, even start with monitoring your SharePoint environment to make sure it's running as optimal as possible. If you're seeing percent processor time hovering about 95%, there's something you need to investigate there. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to point you to some of these pointers at the end of this module slash course, which will kind of summarize all of these best practices here. But these are some that you're going to want to start with in those four generic areas we discussed in the previous slide. And these are specific counters that you're going to want to monitor as you're trying to determine whether or not SharePoint's running as optimal as possible. Now, in addition to that, we want certain services available to us or components of SharePoint. So one of them being a big one is search. So with search here, we want to make sure that we optimize it. So what we want to do is by default, remember all of our components are installed and running on one server because that's how we installed it initially.
And that's a problem?
And that's a little bit of a problem. If you're doing a lot of searches, you have a huge index. We want to use these steps here to modify that topology. And it's not as simple as it was back in 2010. Back in 2010, I'd pop into Central Admin, there was an option right side of Central Admin for modifying topology. 2013, we dig into PowerShell. So if you visit our course on PowerShell that Christopher and I put together, there's a section in there that talks about the search service application, including modifying the topology. But really it's a five-step process. The first one is to make sure the search service instance is started. Then you're going to obtain the current search topology from an existing server. And this is the key step, is to clone that current topology. After cloning it, we now have a snapshot of that, a Polaroid of that. We're now going to make all of our changes. We're going to move some of the search components off from this single server to other servers to kind of offload some of the performance issues that we're having. So at this point, we can add, we can move, and we can move search components within this clone. Remember, we're working on the clone at this point. And then once we've created this clone and we've modified this clone to improve performance, we're finally going to activate this clone and make it the new search topology. So this allows us to deploy that content or that optimization configuration that we just created on that clone. So we start with our current instance, we clone it, we modify the clone, and then we activate that new clone, which allows those new components to spin up on those other servers. These steps to manage search are available in this link here. So you'll want to be able to access that, or you'll want to access that when you're looking at optimization of your search environment in SharePoint 2013. Now, we often see the infamous correlation ID. I've included information here about how we can gather that information and really get the text message, the actual bare bones message of from the correlation ID.
The real thing.
Yeah, exactly. What am I chasing here besides this huge good? So first thing we're going to start with is the merge SP log. And what this does for me, if I have multiple servers, that correlation ID, so I could have three web front end servers, and I happen to be on server number two, this correlation ID pops up. I don't know where that came from, server one, server two, or server three. We can use this merge SP log file PowerShell command to take all those log files on those servers and put them into one on my local computer. Now, after doing so, I can use parameters with the merge SP log file or with this get SP log event down here, and I can specify the correlation ID and drill in to get the message associated with that. So to use the merge SP log file, we use this command right here, and we'll specify the actual correlation ID here when we do this. And then we can either use the ULS viewer to open up this error log file that we created up here, or we can actually use this command as another option, which actually returns this information into a text file that's demonstrated here, and I can review that content inside of that text file. So a couple different ways for us to identify the true message behind the correlation ID, because the GUID is really just not giving us enough to understand what the exact problem is. So that's the correlation ID option that we can use for troubleshooting. We also have the IIS logs that we can use. We can use what's called the log parser. Now, we have a log parser executable that we could use, or we have a little bit more of a GUI interface called a Log Parser Studio, or LPS. You can grab that studio right from this link right here. Within the studio, you're going to first locate the log file that you want to kind of diagnose. The default location is guess where? On the C drive down in this location right here. As always, we want to try to avoid storing information on our C drive like log files. So if that default location has been changed, you'll want to modify this guy here to make sure it's pointing to that default location or the new location for that. So we can actually use the Log Parser Studio for viewing the IIS logs to try to determine what some of the issues are. Often we hear it's a SharePoint issue. We don't even think about IIS. We start troubleshooting inside of SharePoint. We jump over to SQL Server. Sometimes we just need to go to IIS and see what's going on with the IIS world to determine what that problem is. This Log Parser Studio will help you do so. We can also use this with pre-built queries. So when I open up the Log Parser Studio, there's some queries already in there. I just point them to the log file, the log file of interest, or I can go in if there's not a query that meets my needs, and I can create a brand new query to help me identify what's going on with the behavior with IIS. We can then export this log information out, and then I can use a PowerShell script, or as a PowerShell script, so I can use that for future use. Again, the power of PowerShell is the fact that it's reusable, it's consistency, and that's the beauty of using PowerShell as often as possible. Claims authentication. This is something for SharePoint 2013 that we have available to us. It's our default authentication that's available for us in SharePoint 2013. The classic mode, it's available if you really, 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 really need to do it.
Don't do it.
Christopher's shaking his head. Don't do it.
Don't do it.
You lose a lot of functionality if you do it. So we want to avoid using it.
You can't use apps if you use the old style. You really want to use claims-based. Yeah.
And you can't use the Office web app server. We can't use that with the functionality. There's a lot of functionality you lose if you're stuck with the classic mode from 2010.
Don't do it,
as Christopher is pointing out here.
Don't do it. Best practice.
Exactly. So we have here some options. So let's say we are troubleshooting claims authentication because we're solely using that. We have details that we need to gather for authentication attempts. Well, we can use the ULS viewer to view the log file. And again, that's down here. We should be familiar with that. And hopefully you've taken that off from the C drive, but it's your SharePoint log location, web server extensions, 15 logs. We also may have a situation where we want to verify the authentication configuration for a specific web app or a zone within that web app. We can do that using these tools here. So we can check for other possible issues. So we've used the viewer, the OS viewer. We haven't identified the problem. We've looked at the authentication configuration. Yeah, it's using the correct one. We'll say forms-based. And then we're coming down here. Are we a member of the same domain or part of a trusted domain? We want to make sure that we have that. We can test the client connectivity using this command here and make sure that we can connect to our domain controller. Because if we can't get to our domain controller, well, we can't get authenticated. So we want to make sure we have that connectivity by using this command that we have available to here. Now we have some other debug tools, web debug tools like Fiddler and HTTP Watch that we can use for monitoring and analyzing our traffic. We might want to just monitor the traffic and see what's going on. What type of errors are being bounced back to us when we're trying to connect to our server in the SharePoint 2013 environment? And we can also capture and analyze authentication network traffic and use that information that we've captured and view that to ensure that we are, in fact, connecting to the server and try to eliminate the authentication or the connectivity as part of the problem and understand the fact it's probably an authentication issue, not just a connectivity issue. And there's information about that in this article right here. If you want to view that, that'll give you more details on troubleshooting your claims authentication in SharePoint 2013. One-stop shopping of best practices. So what we've talked about throughout this entire course is used by companies who are implementing SharePoint. They're tested, they're used by consultants. We recommend these, and they're often used during the architectural and code reviews. So these are followed by a lot of professionals and subject matter experts in the real world, and we want to make sure that we adhere to these as much as possible. So we've got these divided into categories. So what I'm going to do as a demo for this particular module and to finalize the course is I'm going to bring you out to the site that will allow you to look at all of the SharePoint 2013 best practices. So I'm going to go out to this site here, and you're going to see that this is categorized very nicely at the top. So if I want best practices, let me go down just a tad further here. If I want best practices on backup and recovery or on database or for add-ons or for troubleshooting or for training, These are all available to me. So we talked about a little bit about installation. There's one here on upgrade and migration. Let's go ahead and click on that one. It shoots me down there, and there's a list of articles that gives me some additional information about best practices for SharePoint 2013 with upgrade and migration. Here's my infrastructure best practices. So make sure you identify this link up here and use this as your primary source. Let me scroll back to the top. As your primary source when you're looking for best practices, as this is heavily utilized by deployment, during deployments by consultants and architects when we're trying to decide how we're going to deploy SharePoint 2013. So do that planning process. So that's the final demo, and that's the final module in this course. That's, Christopher, it's been a pleasure as always.
As always, and again, I would shake your hand, but you know, wine glass issues.
Wine glass, yeah, little story battle. On that one.
Yeah,
we've heard one side of the story. We don't know what the real story is, but we've heard a story.
We haven't heard from the wine glass.
Exactly.
But in any event, thank you very much for tuning in. Definitely check out our PowerShell MVA as well, and all the other training that's available for you on Microsoft Virtual Academy. Brian, thank you very much for your time.
Pleasure,
and hopefully we'll have you back sometime soon.
Sounds good. Cheers.